taking my text from 1 Corinthians 10:13. I'm not going to stay there long. I'm going to hit it and use it as a springboard. I usually do that. I'm going to be preaching tonight, and I endeavor to be brief, as I always do. Natalie's up there laughing. I heard her laugh. He endeavors to be brief. We'll be preaching tonight about fantasy versus reality. Fantasy versus reality. 1 Corinthians 10:13 reads, "There hath no temptation taken you, but such as is common to man. But God is faithful, who will not suffer you to be tempted above that ye are able, but will with the temptation also make a way to escape, that ye may be able to bear it." Brother Andy, would you please pray over the message? Fantasy is an escape. People engage in fantasy to escape the mundane everyday life, whether it's their troubles or their strifes or just the day-to-day things that they don't find very exciting. There is an entire genre of literature referred to as fantasy. Now, you could say all of fiction is fantasy. It's not real. It's just made-up stories. But fantasy typically involves elements that are completely outside the realm of reality. Trolls and dragons and, you know, usually swords and heroes, magic and all kinds of stuff. And there's this bookstore down in Arcata called the Tin Can Mailman, where you can take your used paperbacks and books down there. And as a young child, my grandmother knew that I had a love of reading, and so she would buy boxes and boxes of romance novels at the local Salvation Army and St. Vincent de Paul, the secondhand stores. And she would take them there, and she would get like 50 cents credit for, you know, each book she brought in. She probably paid $2 for the whole, like, 250 books at a, you know, secondhand store or whatever. But they had this room that was all fantasy literature. And it was, you know, bottom shelf, up like 10 feet up. You had to have a little step stool to get to the top shelf. And it was an entire room, like a living room of an old house. That's what the Tin Can Mailman is. And I'd go in there and look, trying to find through all those books one that I hadn't read yet. And there were times when I would go in there and look from top shelf, three or four walls, and not find a single fantasy book that I hadn't read. So I know a little bit about escaping from the mundane. I know about escaping from the reality. There's my favorite fantasy series. It's called The Wheel of Time by a man named Robert Jordan. He passed away a couple years ago. Published the first book in 1990. So far, there have been 11,308 pages. So far. There's still an author working to finish the series. When they finish the final book sometime next year, it will have spanned 22 years of publishing. And these books are all massive. An entire universe, a realm of reality, doesn't exist. And I've read it over and over and over. I enjoy it. It's an escape. 1 Corinthians 10:11 reads, "Now all these things happened unto them," whom? People in the Bible. "For in samples, they are written for our admonition, upon whom the ends of the world are come." It's not just literature that engages in fantasy or escape from reality. We have, it seems, an entire media system that is dedicated to portraying things differently from how they are in reality. And often it's harmless. A harmless escape. I was kind of bothered this past week. You know, a big splash on MTV had this new show about teen drama called Skins. You know, it was you know, all the advertisers pulled all of their money out, and MTV said, well, we're going to keep on going. Because MTV never draws back from anything that's salacious or controversial. That's what MTV was founded on. That's how they became what they are. But I read, never watched it, don't intend to watch it, but I read a critic's review of it. And the person said, very well done, not nearly as salacious as they'd have you to believe. It's the term skins, it's about teenage kids. They've said that it's actually child pornography because many of the actors are underage and they portray underage people engaging in promiscuity and stuff. But they said, it's not nearly as salacious as they have you to believe. This is a secular critic. Well done, artful drama. He said, here's the major problem with it. This is what's so dangerous and destructive about it. He said, as a critic, he was given a preview of the first three episodes. He said, you see teenagers drinking, doing drugs. He said the title comes actually from Skins, the papers they use to wrap their marijuana joints and sprinkle them with all the other drugs that they do. But it's not referring to skin, talking about drug wrapping papers. Well, he said, and all these children do these things, and it's lighthearted, and it has no consequence whatsoever. He said, in one scene, this SUV load of teenagers go out, they party, they get all drunk, and then they crash into like a reservoir. And sure enough, as the vehicle submerges, you see all of the teenagers that were in that vehicle bob to the surface, and they're all laughing and hooping it up. Oh, wow, that was a lot of fun. And teenagers, whom this, of course, is targeted to, are very impressionable. If you go out and engage in behavior like that, and you wreck your vehicle, usually they find the bodies scattered everywhere. And all those friends that you love so dearly are all gone. That's reality. Proverbs 16:25 reads, there is a way that seemeth right unto a man, but the end thereof are the ways of death. Oh, Nathan, getting down on things tonight. You know what? People need to know, if you're going to engage in activity like that, you're going to bring yourself pain and woe, and not just you alone. Who hath woe? Who hath sorrow? Who hath contentions? Who hath babbling? Who hath wounds without cause? Who hath redness of eyes? They that tarry long at the wine. They that go to seek mixed wine. Look not upon the wine when it is red, when it giveth his color in the cup, when it moveth itself aright. At the last it biteth like a serpent, and stingeth like an adder. Thine eyes shall behold strange women, and thine heart shall utter perverse things. Yea, thou shalt be as he that lieth down in the midst of the sea, or he that lieth upon the top of a mast. They have stricken me, thou shalt say, and I was not sick. They have beaten me, and I felt it not. When shall I awake? I will seek it yet again. Proverbs 23:29-35. Written 3,000 years ago. Still true today. You say, well, that's too abstract. That's too far removed from current modern day. It's not contemporary enough for me. I knew this young man in the Marine Corps. He was the first person I met with a Bostonian accent. When you meet somebody from Boston, at first I thought he was joking, because it's an entirely different form of English than I'm used to hearing people speak. But he was a funny, funny guy. I can to this day, I remember him making all kinds of funny jokes, and he was never serious, it seemed like. If he had a straight face on, you knew the punchline was coming, because he always had some joke banging around in his head. But I won't ever forget him. And shortly after I left Fort Lee, Virginia, we both graduated from our training at the same time. He went to another base that I did. And shortly after he got there, he went out drinking. And he was having a good time, apparently. And he fell head over heel down a hill, having a good time, I suppose. And he ended up against a tree, leg on either side of the tree. Well, yeah, it ruptured one of his testicles. They rushed him to the emergency room, removed the wreckage of his testicle, and then he was discharged from the Marine Corps because he was no longer fit to serve. About 3 months after he was discharged, his other testicle swelled up, and the surgeon who had operated on him had left a piece of surgical sponge in there, and he became a eunuch. He lost both of his testicles because he went out and had a good time. Woohoo! Boy, he was having fun. That doesn't happen to everybody, right? Nope. Our brother, he's talking about a fellow with a broken jaw. There's another young man I knew named Carter. We were out on deployment. We've been gone for 6 months. Our last stop before we came back to San Diego and then we could be dispersed for leave was Honolulu. And he went out drinking with his buddies. He ended up in the Hard Rock Cafe in Honolulu. And his buddy, who was a big mouth, started a fight. And then he left. And my friend Carter got his jaw broken 2 times on one side and once on the other. Well, when you're in that state, they wire your jaw shut. You get fed through a tube. And they keep you immobilized for weeks. So when we had been home for a month and a half or so, after being gone for half a year, Carter finally came home to his wife and children. I'm sure he had an awful lot of fun when he went out drinking with his buddies. I got a couple more examples here that I really don't want to share. It's when people go out and they think, well, I'm going to live without consequences. I'm just going to go out and have fun. The consequences are immediate. I don't mean to say that they vaporize. Long-lasting, interminable consequences. You can't take it back. There seems to be this desire in society that we can do whatever we want and there's no consequence. We can escape from reality. And then there's no harm in it. Except that there is. The examples I'm not going to give you are even more destructive and graphic than that. I don't want to share them because they're pretty hard. They're pretty harsh. I think I've said enough. Back to the Bible, Nathan. I'm going to read quite a bit of scripture here, talking about reality versus fantasy. Luke 15, beginning in verse 11. And he, Jesus, said, a certain man had 2 sons, and the younger of them said to his father, Father, give me the portion of the goods that fall to me. And that's a pretty bold thing to go to your father and say, I know I've got an inheritance coming, and you haven't checked out yet, but I'd kind of like to have what's coming to me now, because I can't wait. Pretty bold thing to do. But his father, he did it. Gave it to him. Okay, son. You want it? Here it is. Have it. And he divided unto him his living, and not many days after the young man had gotten his inheritance, said he gathered all together and took his journey into a far country. Why do you suppose he went into a far country? He didn't want to be seen doing the things that he intended to do with the money that his father had given him. Just like young Marines. They join the military. They're thousands of miles from home, away from mom and dad and all their families and friends who are people they went to church with, perhaps, that would think ill of them if they saw them out partying and doing all kinds of stupid things. Kids go to college, do the same thing. It's not just exclusive to the military. And they tend to go a little wild. They don't have that restraint there that they normally typically would have. Well, this young man, went into a far country. And there he wasted his substance with riotous living. He drank it up. He partied. He spent his money on women. And I'm sure that while he was in the local social spheres, spending his money freely, he had lots and lots of friends. Because if you see stuff like that going on, you see somebody who's free with their money, they tend to attract friends. People say, money can't buy love. It can buy you some temporary friendship, though. Yeah, well, they'll come around until the money's gone. So this young man, once all the money was gone, where'd all the friends go? He went and found another sucker to take their money from. Who would give them their money? How about that? And when he had spent all, there arose a mighty famine in that land, and he began to be in want. He didn't have anything. He lived it up. No consequences, right? He escaped. He got away from that stodgy old dad and brother and his family. He got to go out and be his own man. Do whatever he wanted to do. Party down. And he went and joined himself to a citizen of that country. And he sent him into his fields to feed the swine. I'm reminded of Mike Rowe's Dirtiest Jobs. He didn't have that back then, but I'm pretty sure that feeding this man swine would have been top on the list of jobs that people don't want to do. We got this young aristocrat, probably never worked a day in his life, not used to getting his hands dirty. His father had a pretty sizable inheritance, and this young man felt emboldened enough to go and ask him for it. Typically, people who work for their money aren't so bold to aren't in such a hurry to go out and waste it. Typically. I'm just reading into it, my own spin on it. So here we have this young man who was raised in probably a relatively good upbringing, had luxury, went into a far country, did whatever he wanted to do, and now he's out there slopping the hogs. And I'm sure they didn't feed him the most pleasant stuff. Even now they feed livestock they intend to fatten up, fermented things. So he's probably out there feeding them rotten, fermented, smelly, stinky, gross stuff. And what's more, the young man's so hungry, he's looking at the food he's feeding the hogs and going, that looks good. I'm pretty hungry. That's kind of the way it is with sin, though. You get out there and you fill yourself with sin, and before long, things that you used to look at with revulsion start to look pretty good. Because you're empty. You don't have a right sense of what's wholesome and what's not anymore. Now, this is where it turns. This is where it turns. It says he would fain have filled his belly with the husks that the swine did eat, and no man gave unto him. And he came to himself. He said, what am I doing here? I'm paraphrasing. He said, how many hired servants of my father's house have bread enough and to spare? And I perish with hunger. I had it a whole lot better off living by daddy's rules. Yes, I had to conform to his standards. But the servants in my father's house were treated better than this man treats his servants. I'd rather be a servant in my father's house and not even be his son. I'll just go back and I'll ask to be his servant. And he arose and came to his father. But when he was yet a great way off, his father saw him and had compassion and ran and fell on his neck and kissed him. And the son said unto him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and in thy sight, and am no more worthy to be called thy son. But the father said to his servants, bring forth the best robe and put it on him, and put a ring on his hand and shoes on his feet. and bring hither the fatted calf and kill it, and let us eat and be merry. It's not quite the reception that the son expected or deserved. He probably had an understanding of what it had taken to accumulate the wealth that he had wasted. It wasn't something of no consequence. Perhaps his forebears for generations had striven diligently, worked hard, and laid up, and created this nest egg of wealth that was passed down through generations. And he, in a very short amount of time, blew it all. He really didn't have any standing with his father. And you know he would have been ashamed to reappear. He probably left dressed in the finest clothes. A picture of health, youth, vitality. Now he comes back, he's been out slopping the hogs. You can imagine he probably doesn't look very good. If he was hungry enough to want what the hogs were eating, he probably was not exactly a picture of health anymore. He probably looked pretty wretched as well. But his father, he didn't even get home. Why? Because his father was looking for him. He was standing there looking out. Perhaps today will be the day that my son will return home. And of course, this is typifying God. This story is called the prodigal son. Prodigal means waster, frivolous, silly, naive perhaps. We go our own way and do our own thing. We really don't have the standing to come back to God in boldness. God, now accept me as your son or daughter. But you don't even get to him. Once you make up in your mind that you're going to go to God, this is the only place in the entire scriptures where it portrays God as being in a hurry. Because when God sees that person turn toward him, God runs to them. And he doesn't reject them. He doesn't berate them with their sin. He says, behold, here's my son or my daughter. Bring a robe and put it on them. Kill the fatted calf. Let's make merry. Welcome home, son, daughter. For this my son was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. Then they began to be merry. You could go on. You can read more about the prodigal son, about his brother's reaction to his return home. But the interest of brevity. Here is the reality of sin. It's a waste of time. It's a waste of your life. It's foolish. It's wasteful. My wife has this little poem up on our refrigerator among pictures of family and different things. Here's a little thing. I took it off the refrigerator and copied it. Today is the day that the Lord has made. Let us be glad and rejoice in it. I can waste it or grow in its light and be of service to others. What I do with this day is important because I have exchanged a day of my life for it. When tomorrow comes, today will be gone forever. I hope that I will not regret the price that I have paid for it. Now, we all have days where we take our ease. But each day is one day closer to leaving this earth, whether by rapture or by way of death. So people find themselves in a state of lack. They have spiritual or emotional emptiness. What do you do in that case? You look around and say, what am I doing here? Like this young man who came to himself. Why would you continue in that state? There's a heavenly Father who's looking out for you. People think, well, I'm so miserable and I'm so wretched and I'm so haggard. God would never accept me. He accepted me. He accepted those that have accepted Christ here tonight. What makes you think that he would treat you any differently?
Well, you don't know my sin.
What did we open with? There's no temptation, but such as is common to man. People think that their particular sin is real.
I'm really a sinner.
You're no worse a sinner than anybody else. Yes, there are degrees of sin. But your sin is just as black as everybody else's. Everybody else's sin. There's no sin that you go, ooh, wow, that's a pretty sin. That's like saying, oh, there's some vomit. That's less revolting vomit. You're being too graphic, Nathan. Sin is graphically ugly. But when you cry out to God, in whatever state you find yourself, whether you're laying in the gutter, recovering from a drunk, whatever it is, when you make that decision to return to God, God will meet you there. And I'm going to close with this. Jeremiah 29:11-13 reads, "For I know the thoughts that I think toward you, saith the Lord, the thoughts of peace and not of evil, to give you an expected end. Then shall ye call upon me, and ye shall go and pray unto me, and I will hearken unto you. And ye shall seek me and find me when ye shall search for me with all your heart." That's it. The way has been made. Jesus accomplished all that is necessary to return you to a right standing with God. And all he needs to do is to hear from you tonight. Pastor.